Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, have the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect through emotion with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and followers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lives online. Listen to your favorite spiritual and master teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. My name is Luciana Stiglitz. I'm the founder of Inner Healers, and I will be your host in this adventure. May you allow yourself to enjoy it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. Our topic for today is shamanic breathwork, which is a process as a combination of healing experiences, shamanic wisdom, death psychology, and addictions recovery methods. The shamanic breathwork process uses the breath, sound healing through chakra-attuned music, energetic bodywork, soul return and extraction, shamanic art processes, scribing, and group processing. Journeys enter an altered state of consciousness that transforms and integrates trauma experience in earlier life, creates a connection with their soul and spirit guides, and receive visions about their sacred purpose in the world. Starting out as a therapist in the mental health and addiction field in the 80s, Star Wolf is a nationally certified alcohol and drug counselor. She holds a BA in Human Services from St. Leo's College and a Doctorate of Ministry and PhD in Spiritual Psychology from the University of Integrative Learning, where she first conceived the idea of someday creating a shamanic psycho-spiritual university. Star Wolf was originally introduced to holotropic breathwork by its founder, Stan Groff, and trained extensively with Jacqueline Small, founder of Integrative Breathwork, becoming one of the lead trainers at Small's Euphysia Institute. Star Wolf also studied shamanic earth wisdom teachings with the late grandmother, Twyla Nitsch, a Seneca Wolf clan elder and founder of the Seneca Indian Historical Society. Grandmother Twyla adopted Star Wolf as a spiritual granddaughter and gave her the spirit name of Star Wolf. Help me welcome Linda Star Wolf. Hello.
Hello there, Luciana. Hello.
Hello, dear. Thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Yes, we're so honored to have you here today with us.
Yes, I wanted to first ask, are you in Peru and are you safe with all that's been going on there?
Yes. Right now I am in Peru. Things are happening up north. So Spirit is taking great care of me. Thanks for asking. So for those of our listeners who might have not heard about you until now, can you please tell them about yourself and your work?
Sure. First, I'd like to thank you for having me on your show, and I frequently do interviews, and I love doing international interviews as well as across the U.S. because I'm also an international traveler and teacher. And before I forget, I will be in Peru, not this year, but I'll be bringing a group to Peru next October 4th through the 14th. And I'll be in your Sacred Valley there and at Machu Picchu, and we'll be doing shamanic breathwork and offering ceremonies there. And I hope to meet with you in person when I'm there, if you're there, and maybe with some of the people that you connect with there in the Sacred Valley. So if people are interested in coming and participating with us, they can contact me, and I'll go ahead and say that now, at shamanicbreathwork.org is my website, and through my own or my Facebook page, things like that. So, but on shamanicbreathwork.org, we have an events page that tells about all of our events, and you can find out, and Peru will be posted probably within the next couple of months. So as far as my work, Luciana, I've been doing therapy or counseling or spiritual work or shamanic work for about 40 years now. I started out as a social worker. I started out as an addictions counselor and then became a specialist in that field. And for me, I have always, either personally for myself or in my field of work, I have always been in a field of supporting transformation and change for ourselves and for our planet. I've never done anything else, and I've worked my whole life and committed myself to that process and journey really since I was a teenager in the 60s, and obviously very idealistic, and but at the same time very practical. I know that all true change comes from within, and before we can change it in the outer world, as much as we can find all kinds of wonderful things in the outer world to do, we won't do them until we change internally and drop away the old programming and the blocks that are there. So that really led me to, in my journeys, like many people, I've tried many, many things. I've been studied many things. I've been with many teachers, especially in my 20s and 30s and into my early 40s. But it eventually fully led me fully on to my path of shamanism and breath work. And by shamanism, I mean really understanding and working with the elements, the natural world, our planet, how we're connected to this earth as well as the sky and the cosmos, and how to be here and to be, as Grandmother Twilight would say, real human beings, which means learning to become humane, compassionate human beings. That's who we're meant to be. That's who we are at our core. And so the best method out of everything that I've studied and everything that I've done for myself was breath work. That's what transformed me the most out of everything I've ever done. And you've already mentioned some of the teachers I've studied and worked with over the years. But for the past, actually, yesterday was the 21st birthday for shamanic breath work and my organization, my nonprofit that's dedicated to change through shamanic breath work, Venus Rising. It was 21 years of yesterday.
Congratulations.
Come of age. Thank you. And so on the spring equinox here, it was the 21st year of what we do. So I teach breath work here at my home in the mountains, here at my treatment program, and also in my retreat programs here. And I teach all over the world. And it's still the method and the ceremony that I believe can accelerate consciousness one of the quickest ways I've ever found for myself and others.
So how did you become a shaman? Is this when you were given your spiritual name, Star? What can you tell our listeners about your story?
Sure. Well, first of all, I grew up in a rural area as a little girl. I grew up in the country, and I grew up with in a Christian family. But my grandmother, even though she was Christian, she was very earth-based, and we were always barefoot and out in nature and working with the farm animals. And I would turn all the animals into my pets and working in the garden. And she was from her family and origin was from Ireland. And she, at the same time, was very comfortable with calling on the energy of Jesus. And she was also very easily just as comfortable calling on the energy of fairies or spirit beings or aliens. And so while my mother was very interested in being more practical and grounded and a little bit more traditional Christian, my grandmother was very much kind of like a renegade Baptist. And so from the beginning, she cultivated gifts that she could see in me. My dreams that I would have, I would share with her, and she would help me interpret them. Many times they would be dreams that were prophetic, that I would see something and then, you know, it would come true. And she called me a dream spirit or dream walker. And she passed when I was 12 years old, which was a very devastating blow to me because I was one of those kind of indigo children all the way back in the 50s before there was even such a name for children like me. And I didn't fit in real well with at school or other children necessarily, that I didn't understand some of the things I saw other children do, some of the cruelties things like that that they did to each other or even to animals and things. And so, you know, we like to think children are innocent, but sometimes children can be pretty mean to each other. And so it was through her death that it was a devastating blow for me, and I felt like I'd lost my best friend.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Future. And so I was just 12. And but that put me on a lifelong search, really, for a quest, if you will. My grandmother believed in the things that were happening to me. She believed in the things I could see and feel. And, you know, she had those senses, too. And so it was then the 60s when she passed, and that was a huge time of opening on our planet. In fact, many people say, you know, really so much of what we experience today, the openings, really had their roots in the 60s. And so I was a young teenager during that time, kind of lost and floundering around and trying to be a hippie and trying to find my way and also going to school to be an activist and a social worker and all those kinds of things. And it was going through a lot of processes during that time and into my young adulthood that finally led me to a place of knowing that spirituality had to be grounded in order to be practical, in order to help us be better human beings, that just spiritual practices alone might have a happy mood or cheer you up or keep you out of depression or a positive attitude, which was good, or be kind to other people, but that there must be something that could help on a more global level, really help us change the world. And that really was the peace cry of the 60s. And that eventually led me to a place where I started reading different materials about shamans. And quite honestly, no one I knew of, or really hardly anyone even knew what the word shaman was until probably around the late 70s or early 80s. And even into the 90s, people didn't know what a shaman was. And I started studying anything I could find and read about shamans. And then miraculously, I would be led to different Native gatherings or teachings, Native Americans, that I would be able to be in sweat lodges, which I think most people know what that is, a purification lodge, but it's a covered structure that you make out of small trees and then out of hides or blankets, and you have stones that you bring in from a heated fire and pour water onto those stones in this enclosed womb-like structure and offer your prayers, and it needs to be led by someone who's been trained to do this. So I participated in lodges. I learned how to lead lodges. And I found the more I would participate in Native American practices and doing those studies and being around indigenous peoples, the more I felt that that was my calling. And I didn't quite know how to bridge that between the world of psychology and the world of this earth-based spirituality and shamanism. And it was during that time I had a vision that led me it's in most of my books it's been written about, but it led me to a teacher, Grandmother Twyla Mitch. She also has passed from the earth now. She passed in 2007, but she was 94 years old when she passed, and she was one of the last living great clan mothers. She was a Wolf Clan grandmother of the Seneca Nation, and she in a vision had actually come to me and called me to her. When I did meet her in person, she absolutely knew who I was, knew the name she had given me in the vision, and called me to study with her. And she had given me the name Star Wolf. And like I said, I've written about it extensively in my book, so I won't go into that here. But she called me to her, and she said to me, you know, Star Wolf, if only indigenous people practice shamanism, it's not going to be enough to help our planet and to help the masses of people. And she said, I believe that people from many cultures and many paths are being called to shamanism and will be called to shamanism to help basically humankind from going extinct and taking a whole lot of other species with them. And that was, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And, of course, since then we've come to see a lot of species become extinct, and we see that humankind is really at a turning point right now. So her message is very alive inside of me, much more so even today than it was when I first started studying with her and learning those ways.
So you mentioned the Seneca Wolf Clan. Can you please tell our listeners about this? Many of them don't know much about shamanism.
Mm-hmm. Well, in many indigenous cultures, in fact, I think almost all very earth-based cultures, whether it's the Maya or whether it's there was Aztec or Toltec. I just came back from leading a group to the pyramids in Mexico where we went to Teotihuacan, where the Aztec culture and then the Toltec culture and many cultures were there and built those pyramids and that great Grand Plaza there outside of Mexico City. Many of these cultures all over the world, even in Japan, in Ireland and Scotland, the clans. These clans were really societies or families. And within that clan, the clan would have, a name or a calling or a role within the clan. But the different clans were guided by different spiritual totems, so to speak, or guides. So, for instance, there could be a bear clan, there could be a turtle clan, or an eagle clan, or a snake clan. There could be a dolphin clan. There could also be something besides animals. I live next to the Cherokee Reservation here in the mountains of western North Carolina, and they have, I think it's 13 clans, and one of their clans, they have a wolf clan, and an eagle clan, a bear clan, but they also have a toe clan. So there's a legend about the toe, like your feet. And so there's also a potato clan. So there can be different types of clans, but each one of those clans that has a guide, whether it's a plant guide or some other symbolic guide. I think the toe clan must have been more about being grounded and walking upon the earth. But the wolf clan, for instance, universally across the world, even though the indigenous peoples may not have known one another, the wolf clan, because I wrote a book called Spirit of the Wolf and did the research around this, the wolf clan universally has been known as the pathfinders or the way showers. And, if you can think about the wolf in the wild, they migrate around, they go to different hunting grounds. They're frequently traveled with native peoples who travel to different hunting grounds or summer grounds or spring grounds. In fact, the research that I did said that the wolves and human beings were complementary to one another and stayed close to one another so that when the wolves were out with frequently lead the indigenous people to where the wild animals were to hunt. And then they would hunt together, and they would actually share in the spoils of the hunt. And that as that happened, wolves came closer and closer to human beings until finally some wolves came in, to camp, or they got their wolf pups, and they started breeding the tamer wolf pups over and over, until we finally have what's known as dogs today. Many people do not know that all dogs come from wolves. There were not dogs, domesticated dogs. They come from wolves. So you hear the comment that dog is man's best friend, but in the native cultures, wolf was actually man's best friend, human's best friend, because they helped each other survive. So the wolf clan is a very important clan in the Seneca tradition and in many traditions around the world as pathfinders, way showers, as community. They represent the community life, and they also represent howling at the moon and calling the energy of great mystery and great spirit and calling the energies from the spirit keepers and many Native peoples, almost every, I guess you could say, Native culture that I've spoken with believes that we didn't originate here on Earth, but that we originated in the Pleiades or on Arcturus or on the planet Sirius, like the Egyptians, ancient Egyptian religion believe that as well. Many, many of the ancient ones believe that we came from the star nations. So the wolf howling at the moon is calling on help from those places. So the wolf has a very important role in the Seneca world, as well as many tribes and nations, indigenous nations around the world. So when you're called to be a part of the wolf pack, you're called to be a teacher and a visionary and a pathfinder.
You also created a healing technique called shamanic breathwork. Can you tell our listeners what this is and who can benefit from this work?
The shamanic breathwork came about as a result of studying many different breath practices, meditation practices, and ways to shamanic journey over the years. And I had probably 15 to 20 years of those practices on top of my psychological skills and counseling skills of working with others. So I had a strong background in assisting people with change and studying mystical traditions and also things like yoga, Reiki, meditation, and shamanic journey, things like that. And after studying also with Grandmother Twyla and her studies around some of the Seneca traditions and not only Seneca traditions but many earth-based traditions and from other teachers, I came to a place where I was called to bring together all the different pieces together for myself in my own world. I had stopped using, in the 60s, substances to alter your states of consciousness was very popular. So I stopped using substances to alter my state of consciousness other than an occasional cup of hot tea with caffeine in it or some raw chocolate 35 years ago. And that was actually also March 21st because I said, I'm through with using artificial substances to alter my consciousness. I want to alter my consciousness in the ways of old, through breath, through music, through sound, through trance, through
That's
journey.
Lovely.
And so I've been 35 years clean of all substances in that way. So, and I've also supported, literally at this point, thousands of people of cleaning that energy out of their bodies and psyches. And to still do that. So I brought together everything that had helped me, Jungian psychology, addiction work, counseling, yoga, breath, artwork, music to add to the journey, to help enhance the journey, integrative sharing after people go through a process. I brought all the things I felt were the cream of the crop, the, you know, first-class things that would help a person not only have an altered state experience, but that would help them to go deeply into their own psyche, their own world, into their own programming, and through the pieces that I pulled together, including sometimes focused body work with people, that all of that would help them to have a catharsis, to help them to have a breakthrough, where something would shift so significantly in their body, mind, and spirit that when they came through that breathwork process and that journey, that they would have a shamanic shift. And what that means is, to have a shamanic shift, it means that you symbolically die to something, just like I died to using substances, and you're reborn. You're reborn in a new way, and you have a new outlook. You have a new way of doing things. And so I brought these processes together and started taking people through breathing and understanding that the breathing was not just to breathe to feel high or feel happy or clear their mind, but that it was to bring about a symbolic death rebirth experience for them. that they're entering into a shamanic initiation and journey when they do breath work. And that's one of the ways it differs from some other kinds of breath work, that it's a profound method that can shake people's lives up a little bit. Sometimes we need to be shaken up a little bit, sometimes a lot, in order to let go of our grasp on a world or a life that is self-defeating or hurting us or hurting others. So that's been what I've been dedicated to for 21 years. And from that, I actually, I really wanted to make this a legitimate thing in the world that wasn't something friends, that wasn't just for the elite or the people who had the money to, you know, go on a trip to Peru or whatever. I wanted it to be for everyone, for treatment centers, for people doing it at home after they learned how to do it, for people who wanted to train to teach and take this into their therapy practices. We have everybody from shamans themselves that I've known, that I've worked with and taught this practice to couples who breathe each other, to yoga practitioners, to tantra teachers, astrologers. We have someone getting ready to take this process into a treatment center. We've done it before, and we're getting ready to do it again. So it's very universal in that it seems to assist everyone. And I do mean everyone. I was just speaking to someone yesterday who's using this process, and she was working with a woman who'd been horrifically sexually abused and has been in therapy for years, and nothing has helped this woman. Nothing has helped her. And she said, you know, Star Wolf, I believe with all my heart that if it wasn't for this process, that she would not be getting better. And I don't think there's anything that could have helped her more quickly or deeply than this process, where she's been able to go in, access this horrific sexual abuse, and release the energy around it, and is beginning to come back and stop disassociating from who it is, from that experience that she had. So,
you and your late husband created Isis Cove. When you knew it was time to grow and started looking for funding, wolves appear in your meditation. Can you tell us what happened then?
Well, we were actually living out in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and I was traveling 30, 40 weekends out of the year teaching all over the world, and we had a vision that came to us and said, the wolves actually called us, and Grandmother Twilight had been encouraging me for quite a while, and she had said, grow some roots. And we just basically opened our energy field up and went out into the world a little bit, traveling, actually doing a workshop in Atlanta, Georgia. And we came up to North Carolina, and we found this beautiful place in the mountains. And there were many things that happened that led to the, you know, synchronistic things that happened for us to be able to acquire this land here. And when we came here, it was just basically 40 wild acres of mountain, and in these beautiful blue mountains, with kind of a broken down old house and a shed. And we literally just came on faith. And we didn't even have the funds to purchase it at that time. And again, there were different people that came forward. There were different synchronistic events that happened that led us to be able to take another leap of faith and say, we're going to acquire this land. And we did. And he was a wonderful master gardener. So he planted beautiful butterfly bushes and plants all over the property. We built some structures here, very simple structures. And then I had a vision about, in one of my breath works, where the great goddess Isis came to me and asked me to create some elemental temples on the land. And the next, well, it was about 3 days later, a medicine woman who's a friend of mine, and who was one of Sun Bear, who was very popular, Ojibwe teacher in the 60s and 70s who's no longer with us. She'd been one of his first students. She called out of the blue and said, I'd like to put a beautiful medicine wheel on your property. And that was one of the first things we built. And each stone is 2,000 pounds. There's 37 stones on the top of the mountain that makes this incredible medicine wheel. And we dedicated it to the beautiful mother goddess Isis, who is the great mother of us all, the original mother of us all.
That's beautiful.
And so we have many structures here on this property that we've created that are beautiful places. We have a month-long training May 18th through June 14th with people coming from all over the world to the training here this year. And so people are here for a whole month and they go through the accelerated training to be shamanic breathwork facilitators.
You have created a university called Venus Rising. Do you offer legal certificates? What do you teach here?
In the United States, we have two different types of colleges. One are accredited, more mainstream universities, and then there's non-accredited colleges or universities. Many spiritual or religious universities are not accredited. For instance, the famous Billy Graham Baptist colleges here in the United States that are very popular with Baptist seminary are non-accredited universities, but people go through and become ministers and to go out to teach in their congregations. So Venus Rising, which is my company, and Venus is, of course, the beautiful planet in the sky that radiates higher love and wisdom to our planet and also represents the energy of the goddess Venus, the goddess of love and beauty and wisdom. So Venus Rising is calling forth more love and wisdom for ourselves and for the planet. And so we are a 501c3 nonprofit spiritual organization recognized by the United States government, and we had the right to start our own church, if you will. And I don't necessarily like to call it a church, but that's what that's how it makes it legal is for your spiritual organization to be a church. But in our hearts and minds, we know that it's a spiritual center, just like any church is. And so we're a legal entity. And after we started our quote, church or spiritual center, and we started working with people not only to heal themselves, but to become trained facilitators, certified shamanic breathwork facilitators, we knew that they also needed a legal certificate that would help them be shamanic spiritual teachers. And so we applied and became a congregation, so we are able to legally ordain in the United States our students who come through as ministers. And their legal title is shamanic minister. We're the only ordination board in the United States that legally ordains shamans, shamanic ministers. And so our students come through, they get training in something called SHIP, SHIP stands for Shamanic Healing Initiatory Process, where they learn how to do their own healing and then to help others heal. And then they learn shamanic breathwork skills, how to do the breathwork. That's our training program. We have advanced training.
That's amazing.
As well. And then we started, we created our legal entity. Then we created a board to certify people as shamanic ministers and shamanic breathwork facilitators. And then we started our university so that we could actually award our students who come through our programs bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and doctorate degrees in shamanic psycho-spiritual studies. And again, it's not accredited like other religious universities, but it is recognized so that people receive diplomas from our training programs.
You were mentioning you've written some books, including Egyptian knowledge. Can you tell listeners how you get this knowledge, and can you tell our listeners a little bit more about these books?
Sure. Well, it's one of the things I really love to do. I'll tell you right now, I have a new book coming out with my best friend, and she's been the director of the American Board of Holistic Medicine in the past, and she's been a dear friend that we have worked together for about 30 years, and her name is Nita Gage. And we have a new book coming out called Soul Whispering, S-O-U-L, Soul Whispering, The Art of Awakening Shamanic Consciousness. And that comes out May 23rd. It can be pre-ordered on Amazon right now. And it comes out through our publisher, the publishing company that has published most of my books. This will make my eighth book, and they've published, I think, six of my books, and that is Inner Traditions Beer and Company, and I like to give a plug for them because they publish some of the most incredible books on the planet of teachers that I'm so on.
Thank you, everybody, for being with us today. Thanks, Star Wolf, for being with us today. And we really hope to have you again soon. You have such an amazing, amazing life, and we're very honored to have you here. So we hope to have you again soon so that you can keep on enlightening us with your path, your knowledge, and your amazing spirit. Thank you.